So what are you supposed to do between each Engadget podcast? Wait in silence? I'm Matt Smith, and every morning I walk through the day's biggest tech stories. It's short, relevant, and ready for listening whenever you wake up. Find Engadget Morning Edition wherever you find your podcasts, or ask your smart speaker for the latest news from Engadget.
What's up, Internet, and welcome back to the Engadget Podcast. I'm Senior Editor Devendra Hardwar.
I'm Reviews Editor Sherlyn Lowe.
This week, it is once again Apple news. So much Apple news we've been focusing on. But Apple just announced two new MacBook Pros and new processors. I think it's kind of like, once again, made the computer world a little shook. You know, it's like just the level of power and everything people are talking about. So these things are very exciting. We will chat about all that. Google finally announced the Pixel 6 and Pixel 6 Pro. And Sherlyn is really eager to chat about that. We'll also be chatting about Sherlyn's Surface Duo 2 review with Michael Fisher, Mr. Mobile himself. So stay tuned for all of that. As always, if you're enjoying the show, please be sure to subscribe to the Engadget Podcast on iTunes or your podcatcher of choice. Leave us a review on iTunes. That one is particularly helpful. And you can drop us a line at podcast@engadget.com. We also live stream our recordings, typically around Thursday, 10 a.m. So you could join us for that on the YouTube channel. It's fun. We have a good core group of people, and you could get to see things like Sherlyn trying to fix her hair. So that's always fun. All right. We've got new MacBook Pros. Finally, and I want to give you guys a little backstory here, because I reviewed all the M1 laptops last year from Apple. I was so impressed with the MacBook Air. That thing was just astounding price wise. And then I reviewed the MacBook Pro and I was just like, there's you're spending a couple hundred dollars more. And it's actually not that much faster than the already very fast MacBook Air. They basically added a fan to do like sustained workloads, but that was it. It didn't feel really pro to me. So these two new laptops, there's a 14-inch MacBook Pro and a revamped 16-inch MacBook Pro. They have new processors, the M1 Pro and M1 Max chips. They have a lot of ports. They have full-size HDMI, once again, finally. They've got SD card ports, which are my, like, the thing I want in every single laptop. You know, they've got multiple USB-Cs, three of those, and a MagSafe power adapter, so you don't have to eat up a USB-C connection just for power. So there's a lot going on here. They're potentially a lot more powerful and very exciting. Sherlyn, I got to ask you, what is your first impression upon seeing and hearing the details about these new computers?
I thought when you were ending that you know, intro to what the MacBook Pros are, you were going to end with very expensive, because they're like a significant price hike from before too. And I mean, what was it? The $1,300 version now starts at $1,999, which is basically $2,000.
I think because and I've thought about this too, because we've been consuming this news. The 16-inch MacBook Pro was always super expensive. When I reviewed that thing 2 years ago, it started at $2,300. The new 16-inch starts at $2,499, so you know, a little more. The 14-inch seems like they just shrunk down the 16-inch, right? Like, it is in that category rather than saying, hey, here's the new 13-inch. Because the 13-inch MacBook Pro is still around. It's going to have the old M1 chip. It's fine. And that still starts at $1,300, right? So, yeah.
It's a reminder that the 1999 model starts with, like, an 8-core CPU instead of the 10-core one that is usually the one advertised. So it's like Devendra said before, elsewhere, you know, the language is always up to 10 cores. It's not, So just something worth noting anyway. I personally am not a MacBook person, so I probably am not, like, as excited about these as some people on staff are. I think the power is intriguing, and for me, just in observation and just being in the industry, I am excited to see how these chips do. I want to see them outperform Intel on a whole other level, or AMD, you know,
or AMD. Like, so we're probably going to get a closer look at these soon, probably next week, because that's when these things are going to be shipping out. But let me just round out the other specs. The screens are fantastic. You know, a little bit more than 14 inches, a little bit more than 16 inches. Basically, bringing over a lot of the technology from the iPad Pro. So it's the Pro XDR screen. There's HDR compatibility. It's super bright because it has mini LED backlights, and it has a 120 hertz variable refresh rate. So everything will look a lot smoother, as we've been talking about. So that was true also of the Surface Pro 8 and the Surface Laptop Studio. Also had higher refresh rate, not the same technology, but
yeah,
that was cool. It's just cool. Like seeing everything here, I'm like, yes, yes, more, yeah. More tech.
You bring up a good point that the like Surface Laptop Studio and Pro, they have modes that keep them in either 120 hertz or 60 hertz, whereas this is ProMotion, which is adaptive, which will just shift based on what you're doing, right? If I'm not wrong.
I think they say it goes as low to like 24 hertz. So it's like, 10.
I thought I saw 10.
It's smart enough to like slow down the screen if you're just like staring at a document or something, and then speed it up as you're scrolling. Microsoft has been really fishy about that, because every time I ask them, they say there is some software stuff in there to kind of like save battery life and not just like throw a high refresh rate at your screen all the time if you don't really need it. But they've been very cagey about how that works. So in your system settings, you're still choosing 60 hertz or 120 hertz. Yeah.
I think they're just letting it be. They're kind of thinking, well, the screen's not refreshing. Like if you're statically looking at an image, the screen's not like necessarily refreshing or doing anything, then it's like not at a high refresh rate, right? Because it's not doing
I like to know how things work. That's all. So yeah. Microsoft just being like, don't worry about it. Software is taking care of it. Really sounds iffy to me.
It's a trend from Microsoft. We'll get into that later.
It's a trend. But I do think like the overall takeaway here is these things are super powerful and they're actually MacBook Pros, right? Because I think once they started getting rid of ports that people always needed, I believe it was like 2016 era MacBook Pro, they got rid of like the HDMI and a lot of stuff people actually wanted and just gave you like four USB-Cs. And they said, deal with it, you know, deal with the dongles, deal with the cables and the adapters that you need for that. This, both of these machines seem like things that an actual professional can take somewhere and do some serious work with. And that's also because these chips are supposed to be really powerful. The M1 Pro is a up to 10 core CPU, up to 16 core GPU, and up to 32 gigabytes of memory. And this is also on a 5-nanometer process like the M1. The M1 Max goes even further. That's up to a 32-core GPU. That is huge. Up to 64 gigabytes of memory. I don't think I've ever used a laptop with that much RAM. So
yeah,
that is something. And I think talking to pro users, like they were so disappointed with the last year's MacBook Pro. This is the big revamp people have been waiting for. They also have the keyboards we first saw on the MacBook, the 16-inch MacBook Pro, which I really like. That was the Magic Keyboard. It feels really good and responsive, so I'm looking forward to seeing how that works. Yeah. I know you're not really a MacBook person, Trillin, but are you tempted? Like, are you tempted by the sheer power in these things?
I am. If only for the comparisons to, like, Intel's chips. I want to see what that does. I also am glad to hear, like, what? Apple is cute. You know, like, okay, get rid of the ports. No, we made a mistake bringing it back. Oh, touch bar, so cool, innovate, hey. Oh, no, let's take it.
There's no touch bar
here. I love that.
It does seem like Apple slowly but surely is, like, just backing away from every design decision Johnny Ive made, basically. Like, we are kind of going back. Specifically, these two things look like the PowerBooks, and I don't know if that was before your time or not, Sherlyn, but PowerBook.
I don't remember
like
any of
those. Like the G4 and I think G3 titanium PowerBooks, like, were beautiful machines. They were like a little chunky, but had these like great rounded edges, all the ports you'd need. It is weird that it looks like Apple's basically just going 20 years back into the past to design these things. But what are they going to do, right? They still need to have enough space for ports if they want to actually include those ports. They can't keep going thinner if they actually want to, you know, put in more power. And I think we're all learning too, like with the Surface Laptop Studio, we don't need to go thinner. We can start chunking up these laptops if you want more battery life, if you want more power. That's just kind of the reality you have to live in, right? So I'm really excited by these. I want to know like what people are thinking, especially you, Ben. I remember you've been waiting for your good upgrade moment. How do you feel about these machines?
So I'm very excited by this for the purposes that I would use them for, which is mostly like, you know, big multi-track radio projects or something with a lot of sound design and stuff. Between the M1 Pro and the availability of, you know, maybe 32 gigabytes of RAM, I have a feeling that if a friend of a friend who produced the Wolverine podcast for Marvel, it is fully spatial audio. Mm-hmm. He used a whole binaural setup. There are tracks on tracks on tracks of sound design and everything. And I feel pretty confident that I could run every single one of those tracks if they sent me the session file. Sure, that's really, really cool. But for my personal stupid little reasons, the thing that I'm most excited about is one, the availability of running two outboard screens, mm-hmm. two external monitors. So that would give me a total of three monitors, right? Mm-hmm. Am I understanding that right?
That's true, although you could always do that with the older MacBook Pros. And the last M1 chip, that people started making dongles that let you do up more than one screen. But yeah, you can do what you're saying.
It is nice to have a completely on label use, because if you if you need to get it serviced and you kind of let it slip that you were using kind of an off label use, they would be like, oh, well, you burned it out yourself.
You did it.
You asked
you
it to
it.
Do too much. Weirdly, I'm also wondering whether or not the 120 hertz refresh rate applies to the cursor that goes across my screen as I'm editing audio.
Anything that moves.
Really anything that moves? Because I'm wondering if there's any kind of a threshold that you have to cross in order for the 120 hertz to fully kick on. Because when you're scrolling, you can be scrolling pretty fast. Yeah. This thing does not go that fast.
And it can't localize refresh rate for a single thing. I don't know. I think we shall see. Do you have a preference for 14-inch or 16-inch? If you want a big timeline, don't you want the bigger screen?
Oh, yeah. I would absolutely do a 16-inch. So I remember right before the pandemic, the Engadget office got the 16-inch MacBook Pro. This was the last Intel version. And so I got a chance to put my hands on that for just a little bit. And I was comparing it to my 2012 MacBook that's 15.3 or 15.5 inches or something. And I'm like, honestly, it does feel like there's a difference. It's weird, but it does feel like there's a difference.
We didn't mention, by the way, both of these computers have camera notches, and that is...
I was getting to that. Was the next thing I wanted to bring up after you guys were done.
That's been a controversial thing because, people are already complaining about them on the iPhone. We're kind of ready for them to go away from the iPhone. Very funny to see Apple just kind of throw it into the MacBook line here. I don't hate them, is the thing. I think the initial visceral reaction was like, oh no, this is hilarious. Look at what Apple's doing. Whereas we have seen much dumber PC alternatives. We've seen pop-out cameras from some companies. I reviewed an Asus gaming laptop that basically had a notch that stuck out from the top, which that's just begging to be broken. We remember the Dell XPS used to have the nose cameras at the bottom. So there have been a lot of dumb ways of managing the webcams. I think the smart thing Apple did here is that it looks like the notch is also where the system bar is, the menu bar and everything. And that's actually always been something that just eats up real estate on your Mac. You can go full screen, you could turn it off that way. But now it seems like your workspace is right below the actual menu space. And to me, you still get a decent amount of workspace. It's just that little bit, the file menu and everything is all just shifted up, the Apple menu. How do you feel about this, Sherlyn? And Ben, do you guys think this is disruptive or weird or just different?
It's annoying. I get that people are going to dunk on this for a long time.
Use that space in the menu bar. It's just on your Mac. It's just there.
Bar. And I don't know if I've ever seen a program that takes up that much space. You'll have file and edit and all of that stuff, but it never gets to anywhere near the center of that bar. People will continue to dunk on it though. Remember that commercial for I think it was probably an Android phone or something with the guy who had a hairline that was exactly like the notch on the iPhone 10 or so. I'm not saying that they designed it this way so that it would be really easy to see from a distance, but it's just one of those things that you can look at a glance and you're like, oh, that's one of the new M1 Pro MacBooks.
It's true. It's a little bit. I do remember when the original PowerBook G4s came out and it was maybe a little after, like once Apple started doing like the big magic touchpad and trackpad stuff, like that's when you could walk into a coffee house and see they have the newest Mac. So maybe that's part of it. Do want to say these new webcams are 1080p. Finally, for some reason, Apple has only used 720p on their MacBooks and MacBook Pros until now. So, hey, that's a big step forward. I don't think the notch is that bad. But I guess the one thing it doesn't have is Face ID. And somebody, you know, I was kind of expecting that given the size of the notch and everything. No, it's still going to rely on Touch ID, fingerprint sensing and everything. So, you know, that's not the greatest thing. One thing I also want to shout out is that they also have both of these laptops also have 6 speakers and spatial audio support. So I remember the 16-inch MacBook Pro sounding great.
Doubt about the spatial audio. Audio out of anything. A laptop.
Watched a Bose TV commercial or something, anything can have spatial audio. Anything can have like fake surround sound. So yeah, we got to see how these things work. I do remember the 16-inch MacBook Pro speakers being really, really good. So like once you're at that size, and Dell has been doing this too, like a lot of companies have been really focusing on audio quality in these things. They're also supposed to be better onboard microphones too, to like, they say record instruments, but I think more like you will just be the boss of every, you know, web meeting you're on, every video meeting. So I think that's the main thing. Do you guys have any major takeaways about either of these machines? Would you want to play with them? Do you think the pricing is just too high? $19.99 for the 14-inch, $24.99 for the 16-inch?
I mean, I'm not a MacBook person, so I'm not. But I want to remind everyone that Apple didn't just announce MacBooks at the Apple event. Mm-hmm. There were AirPods, there were music things, there were new HomePod minis that didn't look all that new, just got color. New colors. Just color. But yeah. The most hyped about product out of Apple from yesterday or from this week apparently is a $19 microfiber cleaning cloth.
I don't think
apparently is super out of stock.
I don't think hype is the word. It was more like the most mocked product that people were. Yeah.
Yes, I hope you understand sarcasm someday. But yeah, apparently a lot of people were dunking on this thing. Yes, microfiber cloths don't generally cost $1,900. $1,900.
I mean, $19. Don't give them ideas. I'm sure they're thinking how to make a $1,900 cloth.
They're going to be like, this is crystalline fibers and diamond color things.
The diamonds are going to clean your screens. That's how that's going to work.
And Mike Jones Jr. in our chat says, it's the iCloth.
It's the iCloth.
Oh, my Lord. Mm-hmm. Oh, no.
Yeah, there is more coverage of everything that Apple announced, including the fun new colors for the HomePods and the new new line of AirPods.
New AirPods with spatial audio.
Yes, new AirPods with spatial audio on the Engadget site.
Which seemed fine. Yeah.
If we're wrapping things up, since I was the person who was very excited about all of the MacBook stuff, and I was just like hoovering up all of the rumors and everything, let's just do a quick rundown of rumors that were talked about and things that were confirmed. So, Touch Bar has been tossed away. Function keys are back. Absolutely confirmed. And that was something that was people were running with even months before this actually came out. A return to MagSafe. This was another one of those things that came out months before this was, I think, originally reported in Bloomberg. Then there's also that Apple leaker, Ming-Chi Kuo. Sherlyn, am I pronouncing that correctly? Is there a better way to...
Ming-Chi Kuo, but... I mean, he probably has his Americanized pronunciation,
Let's just have the better pronunciation in there. So, yes.
It should be Guo Mingzhi, probably, but...
So that man with his name pronounced correctly suggested that there was going to be a return to MagSafe. That's been confirmed, very confirmed for a while. More ports? Yes, that was something that was confirmed again a while ago, but... Then, like, as we're getting to all of these things at once, the Touch Bar and the MagSafe and more ports is the reason that I was a little bit afraid that people were going to hurt their own feelings by believing all of these leaks and possibilities and saying, like, oh, wow, is this MacBook actually going to be a MacBook that I want to buy? Because it's a return to a form factor that looks more like, what is it,
The PowerBook.
You know, definitely, PowerBook and also, like, the 2012 model up to the 2015 or so model, right? Before they moved to USB-C. And then I think the only thing that was late breaking that was a little bit of a surprise, at least to anyone who wasn't following this bit by bit, is the 120 hertz refresh rate. But then again, when I've talked about it with you guys, the very professional tech journalists, you're like, oh yeah, they just took the displays from the iPad Pro and they put it into the MacBook
I think
Pro.
The notch is more surprising than what they did with the screen resolution. And certainly because Microsoft did it, I was like, I think on a certain degree, they all kind of knew that this was going to start happening with productivity laptops. So I'm excited. Hey, I want more. Give me an XPS 13 with a high refresh rate. Give me the laptops I already love with all that stuff. I think it's going to be interesting to see like how people take on these new computers. The idea of the 14-inch, this new 14-inch MacBook Pro, is that it's basically a smaller 16-inch. It is not a replacement of the 13-inch just yet. Although I can imagine like that's going to happen eventually. Like, you know, Apple got rid of the 50-inch MacBook Pro almost immediately when the 16-inch came out. So that could be where it goes. But right now, if you look at their pricing, the MacBook Air starts at $999. The 13-inch M1 MacBook Pro starts at $1,299, I believe, still. And then you bump up to $1,999 for this 14-inch. So I think for the amount of power that you're getting in these machines, I think you spec'd out something that was like over nearly $3,000, Ben, for what you wanted. You're going to
pay
a lot.
Okay. And that's a whole other thing, because
that's how it goes.
Yeah. We were talking before the show about like, okay, I spec'd out what I wanted. My dream laptop would be 16-inch, the mid grade in terms of chip. So it wouldn't be a M1 Pro Max. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. No. But it would have
just the Pro. Yeah.
Yeah, just the Pro and 32 gigabytes of RAM. Mm-hmm. And I was like, 32 gigs, like, too much. And
how long do you want this to last you?
Yeah. You came in with the very apt comment of, like, if you can only get it in once, because you can't put in more RAM post facto,
the RAM
you've got to go for
into,
more.
Yeah, the RAM is built into the system on a chip, so it is right there alongside the processor and the GPU and everything. So yeah, you can't upgrade. There's no opening these things up for that. Get as much as you can afford. One thing I didn't mention is that these computers do something cool. Having all that RAM also means all that memory is also addressable by the graphics, by the GPU. And that means you can have a GPU in a laptop that's basically eating up 64 gigabytes of RAM. You certainly cannot do that with the highest end NVIDIA RTX cards. You know, even the best pro GPUs now are, I think, limited to 16 gigabytes of RAM. So all big things. Aim up, people, especially for these computers. The downside of system on chips and mobile hardware like this is that you can't expand them. You can't upgrade them. So you're going to have to spec up and spend a little more. But let us know what you think, folks. Podcast@engadget.com. Let us know if you're happy with these upgrades or if you wish Apple went in another direction.
This week was Hell Week, obviously, for those of us who work in or cover tech, because after Apple's event on Monday, it was followed right up with Google's big Pixel event. This was the unveiling, the full unveiling of the Pixel 6 and Pixel 6 Pro, the new Android flagships powered by Google's own Tensor chip. So for me, I mean, I've seen the phone before when they first teased Tensor in August. So it's just kind of getting to know all the specs and all the features a little bit better. I had hands-on with it. I actually have one device now that I'm testing. Oh, not one, two devices that I'm testing. It feels for me like it's not my introduction to this device. So I kind of want to hear your take on it, Devendra. Did you feel like it was impressive? Is the Pixel Pro, Pixel 6 and 6 Pro something you're into?
It seems fine. Like, it seems really nice. You know, if I want... Yeah. The thing that has really turned me off of Android phones is that there's so many of them. They all look really nice, to be honest. Everybody has like nice etched screens. Everybody has nice cameras. Yeah. But I've been waiting for Android phones to like do something special and do something different. And it does sound like the Tensor chip is kind of getting there, you know, as I wrote up some details on this chip, and it seems really cool. They've got two ARM. X1 cores. It's very similar to like what Qualcomm's been doing, but on a Qualcomm, you know, Snapdragon 888 888. That thing only has one X1 high power core. The Tensor has two, and it has like two mid-range cores and two low power cores. And there's just like a lot going on that seems interesting to me. I was reminded of the Moto X launch back in like 2013, which was Google's like, man, Google's had so many shots, you know, of like trying to make it mobile. Like they own Motorola for a while, you know, and I think it was after the original Nexus phones when they were like, let's make something a little mid-range. Let's make something, you know, this is a little more affordable with like custom hardware that's can support ambient computing. And the Moto X was like this beautiful little dream of a phone, and it died because not enough people bought them. It does seem like they're kind of going back to that here, right? This is a phone you can live with. You can shout commands at. It'll translate things for you. It seems cool if it actually works as advertised.
I think definitely RIP the Moto X and like, you know, Google's time with Moto. The Pixel for me represented kind of a re-energizing of Pixel phones, because in the past, the last few have been so blah. They've kind of just been disappointing, underwhelming. I'm excited for these. I can't say what I think about them so far. I can say that, you know, based on my hands-on time, it's definitely very impressive. I have a couple of gripes, though. Like, one is that these are big phones. They're not chongsters. They're like onksters, at least, or honksters. And like,
we need to create a diagram of these. Yeah.
Yeah. We need to create a diagram of the chonk scale that old listeners and audience members of this podcast are familiar with by now. But anyway, these are big phones. There's no longer that smaller option for me, for someone like me who prefers a smaller phone, right? The Pixel 5 was a smaller phone. The Pixel 4 and 4 XL, at least the 4 was smaller.
What are the sizes again of these guys?
The 6 is a 6.4-inch screen. The 6 Pro is a 6.7-inch screen.
Man.
Now, the 6 Pro feels a lot. I know. The 6 Pro feels a lot like a Note 20, Note 20 Ultra. It's not as heavy, but the feel, the blockish shape, the kind of same screen size, it's definitely there. The problem with the 6.4-inch model, which is a Pixel 6, is that despite having like that 3-inch diagonal smaller footprint, the actual physical dimensions of this phone aren't that different. It, like, they're basically the same size. So,
and that's bigger than an iPhone, like the base level iPhone 13, 13 and iPhone 13 yeah. Pro, right? Like, it's like 0.3 inches bigger. So that, that just seems big to me.
No, it's for those of us who want a smaller phone. No, it's sorry. I'm sad to say it's no longer there, but I guess it does make the decision between which of the two to buy a little easier, because it's not that much different in terms of size. So there's one thing you can cut out of your equation. So that's one of my gripes with it. Another is, that's a gripe with it. Mm-hmm. I forgot what I was trying to say was my other gripe. Oh, I think the in-display fingerprint sensor is one thing that's concerning, because I think a lot of people who've been fans of Pixel, and I talked to my chiropractor, who's a Pixel fan.
Okay.
Imagine that, people out in the real world. And my chiropractor was very upset that they removed the fingerprint sensor from the Pixel 6. So I was like, all right. There doesn't seem to be a reason to move it to the front other than they seem to be using that backspace for the tap to launch Snapchat thing.
Yeah. It is kind of a cleaner design. Like, I think it was LG that started putting the fingerprint sensor in the back with Android phones, and then everybody started doing it because you wanted the all-screen stuff. There is a certain, like, it's a little more ergonomic if you're just holding your phone and you use your index finger to tap in, but it really does limit what they can do with the back of the phones too, right? It can't look as clean. They can't put in those tap features necessarily.
Yeah. So look, I kind of get it, but I think that's something that, like, people are going to be, like, a little bothered by, you know, people who want some, like, the perfect, like, those are small little gripes to, like, point out. But I will also say that the Pixel 6 starts at $599.
Not bad.
Holy mother of dragons. Yeah. For $600, there's, like, excuse me, OnePlus, like, step aside, or Samsung Galaxy A, what? You know what I mean? Like, no more awesome squad for the Samsung A series phones. This is squarely in that sort of mid-rangey price range, but
pretty good.
With pretty high-end features.
Talking about squarely, though, how do you feel about that camera hump? Because I just look at that and I'm like, the thing that kills a lot of my phones is like putting them into my jean pockets and like them getting like snagged on like the top end or something.
Yeah, yeah.
That thing just seems like it is made to do that, just to get snagged over and over again.
Yeah, I don't usually put this phone in a pocket, A, because, you know, it's been in the discourse long enough that women just don't have a lot of pockets. Or if we do, they're in skirts that are very roomy. So, whatever, it's not snagging or anything. I don't mind it so much. I think I've seen some comments pointing out that it's a little bit of a dated design at this point.
Yeah.
And kind of, I get it, but it's symmetrical and it doesn't wobble at all when you put it on the table. Very little anyway. We're used to camera humps at this point,
so at least it's not like just a little square in the corner like an iPhone. So yeah, it's fine. I don't like any of these solutions, to be honest. They all look bad. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I agree. Camera humps look bad, but this is kind of what we all gotta live with right now. So, you know, we'll put up with it. I am more excited for the prowess of the cameras. Like, I think they'll do good. And then Google showed off some special features like Magic Eraser, like Action Mode, Face Unblur. There's a lot of interesting things going on here that Google's doing with Tensor. And look, none of the features they've described are brand new. Sony's done the Action Blur thing. Huawei's done the long exposure for traffic taillights thing. And Face Unblur might be novel, that might be a smart, clever way of doing things that Google thought up that I guess no one else thought up. So there's interesting things here that's not just about quality of images, but also about like being able to do more things.
Yeah. They're talking a lot about the Tensor processor being for AI, right? And there's a lot of like stuff in there that this can do. Like the live translation seems good if it can actually work. Like there's a lot of those things. Yeah. A lot of like, I'm sure AI work on the image processing too, but also like in real time video capture as well. So like there's a lot going on here and I'm intrigued by that.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
I can't say much right now, but I am cautiously quite excited. I think this, don't forget that the Tensor chip has a TPU in it, which is basically a miniaturized version of Tensor processors that they have in their data centers to do all of this major and heavy AI and machine learning processing. So it remains to be seen or openly discussed, but it's very promising. Yeah.
And they also, they're talking about like there are security chips and stuff. Like there are layers of security in this that seem pretty good too, especially since like, hey, our phones are really important. You know, it has all of our confidential information, often has payment info, often has like, you know, people I know will save like important numbers somewhere on their phones, like their notes or something. So you want to protect these things just as much as your PC, probably even more, I'd say.
And I think it's sort of Google acknowledging, not acknowledging outrightly, but sort of knowing that like Apple is doing something good and smart with being so privacy and security obsessed, right? And so it's trying to also give enough screen time to security, being like, oh yeah, 5 years of security updates, look at our security hub, look at our privacy dashboard. Not that, and we know Google hasn't had the best track record on this. So they're making an effort. They really want you to think of Pixel 6 and the Pixel line anyway as like, like they said, the best expression of Android, the best place to experience Android, the best Android phone. So I guess watch out, Samsung, because they're coming. This poor little 1% market share little slice is coming for your bigger slice. They want to creep into your space. I don't think they're going to I don't think they're going to convert any iPhone people. I think it's you're more like looking at the Samsung owners, the OnePlus owners who are like not super pleased with what's going on.
Normal people, right? I think we tend to focus on the enthusiasts, right? And the people who are like, I want the latest and greatest and yada, yada, yada. But a lot of these features have been in phones before. And I think bring it down to price point people want and also a name people will trust too. Like it does seem like Google wants to build its equivalent of the iPhone, right? And they've been trying that for a while and having custom hardware tied with their own specific software and just being able to like lean on that does make for an overall cohesive experience. That's kind of why I stick with iPhone for my personal phone, even though Android is still like super intriguing. Apple is just able to do more because they have such control.
Yeah.
Have we heard anything about could this Tensor chip end up being in other phones down the line? Could this be a thing that Google starts promoting?
I have not heard of any official like wording around that. I think I've seen like a stray interview here or there where they're like, yeah, sure. Other devices, potential, and that sort of stuff. I'm sure everyone's dreaming of the day where Google designs its own chip for like a Chromebook and brings over, like, makes its own ARM-powered Chromebook. Would be interesting.
They're not far from that, right? Like, they're doing the server chips and then they're doing this. I'm not even talking about like Chromebooks. I'm talking about like, you know, HTC or somebody being like, hey, that's a nice chip you got there. That's certainly different. Let's design around that. I just remember the HTC One being a very, very cool thing. So I want that back in style at some point. But this seems cool.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you. I think it'll be like, this is the start of an interesting future for Google. I think we'll know more when we can talk or you know, have done some more testing and can, you know, tell y'all what that real world performance is like. And is this the beginning of something really good for Google, or just kind of like we're going to see things continue the way they have been? I will say there's some really good feedback and comments and observations basically from people in our chat. Jonathan Tran said interpreter mode is pretty cool. Interpreter mode is basically something that's existed on Google devices for a while now, where basically you turn on the Translate app, you go to interpreter mode, and you take turns speaking in your respective languages, and it will translate out for you. They had Marie Kondo on the stream, y'all. The eminent Marie Kondo speaking in her native language. And then she also understands English, so when she was listening to the assistant version of translation, she seemed impressed by the accuracy of what the AI was able to do. So it did look really cool. I just am waiting for the day where we get simultaneous live, you know, translating happening in your headphones while you talk to someone.
I do think we're getting there. Yeah. It's kind of wild. Like, yeah, in your smart glasses in the future, eventually you'll get that all piped in. Cool. Looking forward to seeing this.
That's the future we're working towards.
And when are we seeing these phones exactly, Sherlyn?
So they're on shelves October 28th. And that's when you can buy. You can already pre-order them now. Speaking of pre-orders. Oh my gosh, Google. It's like they weren't expecting people to want to buy these things, y'all. Like, apparently, all of October 19th, the pre-order pages were either... It was just like trying to buy a GPU or a PS5, apparently. Like, you put your thing in the cart and it just disappears. Yeah. I don't know if it was a stock issue or a server issue.
It sounded more like a bad website. Yeah, I don't think it was like... Maybe it was crushing under the load, but it wasn't necessarily stock. It sounded like the tech of the shopping site just couldn't take it, which, man, that is... That's not, I want to have faith in you. Like, I want this stuff to just work.
Exactly. It's as if y'all don't run a giant tech company or something.
Theory that Google does a lot of this stuff badly, and yet they keep proving it. You know, I want to get excited for their gear, but it's like when it comes to consumer level stuff, like running a functioning store and selling devices properly, they seem to have trouble with that. Maybe one day they'll figure this out.
Oh, yeah.
I believe in Google.
I hear you.
Yeah.
I believe in Google's ability to admit where they've been wrong and improve afterwards, but like very, and then make some mistakes somewhere else later on. So there you go.
Absolutely.
We will be reviewing the Pixel 6 and 6 Pro. You can, you know, check out the Engadget website. Stay tuned. Subscribe for more. And then send us your questions about the Pixel 6 so that I know what to look out for when I'm testing these things. Send them to podcast@engadget.com. On top of all the events that happened this week, there was also the Surface Duo 2 to review. And this morning, as of this recording on Thursday, Surface Duo 2 review embargo lifted. It all went up. You can check out my full review on Engadget.com. But we wanted to take a little bit of time to go into more detail here because there's just so much to talk about that I can't get into within the confines of a review. So joining us today also to talk about this is fellow Duo 2 reviewer and dual screen and just overall odd phone enthusiast,
mobile enthusiast,
in my opinion.
Yeah.
mobile enthusiast too. Michael Fisher, aka the Mr. Mobile. Hey, Michael.
Odd phone enthusiast. I will take it. I've been called worse, so I really appreciate it. Thank you, Sherlyn. Devendra, nice to be back.
Not bad. It's not bad. Yeah.
Good to chat. Yeah.
Nice to be here.
We had a certain, like, okay, so first of all, let's start from the beginning, yeah. Right? When Microsoft was shipping out these devices, I think some people got it a little later than others. And Michael, yeah, you were one of the few people. So you, a little behind the scenes here, had less time than everyone to really crunch on this review and get it up in time, to be in time with everyone else.
Yeah.
This lifted just a while ago, so I haven't been on the lookout for all the reviews. Did you put your video up yet? Can people go watch it yet?
No.
okay. We understandable.
Everyone mad. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, you know, the thing was a day or two late getting to me.
Yeah.
But also, you know, it's not like a, I don't know, what do you want to call it? It's not like a Pixel 4. It's not like a Galaxy S, whatever. It's not, you can't necessarily just kind of churn on this, on a device like this, and crank out a review that's kind of 80% what you said last year. Even though, as I did read in your review, there are some things that from last year that we wish had not recurred on this thing. So no, my review is not up yet, but it'll be up tomorrow.
Cool, but you already have thoughts on this. I know you're one of my like gut check people on a device like this and the Same. Z Fold 3, and yeah, oh, and we try to help each other out with these reviews and share thoughts and stuff like that. Yep. And you know, I remember like I didn't know you hadn't gotten the phone yet, but I remember like going to you immediately and being like, "This software still sucks. Like, is it just me? Is it just me?"
Right.
And then when you did get your phone. What did you think?
First of all,
like when you got the Duo 2,
I want to say how weird it is that we have to do that, because I think we all look. We do it somewhat for professional reasons, right? Because it's like sometimes you really do get a lemon, and then you have to check that out.
Right.
But I also feel like I'm often defending myself to myself against the hordes of people on Reddit who spent $1,500 on the last one and really, really want the new one to be great, or really still want the first one to be great, and just defend it to their dying breath, even though it, like, you know, just literally killed their sister, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. They can justify
no,
anything.
Oh, no.
When you sent me that message and I hadn't gotten the device yet, I was like, uh-oh. And then I unboxed it and took a look at it and had a day or two with it. And while there were so many improvements, a lot of which, you know, we should touch on, there were still these fundamental little things where I was like, wait, hold on a second. Can I still not type quickly on this device? And then the other review, I started checking with other reviewers as well. And I was like, am I the only one? And eventually it got to a place where it's like, well, 5 of 8 people were like, yeah, no, this is also not as fast in various ways.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, well, then this is going to be a hard week.
They had a whole year to like fix these issues, right?
This is what I'm saying.
Oh my gosh.
This is what I'm like. I don't. I try not to be bitter or snarky outside of Twitter, right? But like my initial instinctive response after coming across some of these errors was, what was happening all year?
Yeah, what's going on? Yeah. Can we real quick? By the way, can we just say what is new in the Duo 2? What can people expect that wasn't there last year?
I'll take this. The hardware is slightly different. You've got the narrower screens, but a larger canvas. And then you've got 90 hertz refresh rate. It's faster than before.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
The new glance bar. You've got the insides of the screens kind of curved towards the edge, so you can see something, a little bit of the screen through the hinge. We'll get into whether or not this was that useful. And then one of the biggest and most obvious changes is the camera. I think in the past, there was just one single 11 megapixel camera that like serve as both your selfie and regular facing outwards camera. This time around, there's a triple 12 megapixel system, and it's a bump on the back. So it introduces the situation where you can't really close the phone all the way outwards anymore. And I really wanted this to be such an improvement, but I don't know if you
we were rooting for you, Microsoft.
We were rooting for you,
right?
I saved the camera testing to the last, and that's when I was like, oh my god, my thoughts of this just fell through the drain. Like it just crashed.
I wish I had known the cameras were going to underperform so severely before I planned the video shoot, because it's always nice when you're doing a YouTube video to take the device somewhere. And David Kogan's been a big influence on me with that in that respect. And so I was like, well,
I'm still so jealous you guys go on those road trips without me.
It's a lot of fun. Well, you can come anytime. This one was in Brooklyn. You could have come over because Brooklyn just opened its first public library branch since the year I was born. Oh. And I was like, well, there's no device that looks like a book more than this does. So
where is that branch, by the way?
It's in Dumbo. It's near Brooklyn Bridge Park.
Oh, nice.
I guess that makes sense. Yeah,
it does.
I could have gone,
but you could have. Anyway. Yeah, but you wouldn't have wanted to. I was wearing shades when I came on because I'm still recovering from it. The duo really drove me to drink. The thing is, you know, the camera is, we shouldn't have expected it to be. Look, it's on a big module on the back of the phone. It takes up enough space. It makes a statement like, hey, I'm a serious camera phone. But you know, Microsoft lost, I think, a lot of its optical in-house talent when the Lumia stuff stopped, and a lot of those people went to Huawei and other places. Mm. And I think they're working with at least one outside firm on this as well as internally. But it's just, it feels like a camera from 2015, you know? I mean, the auto exposure is all over the place. As you were saying in your review, it's not reliable.
Yes.
You can't speed, you know, can't really take burst shots very well. The colors, the contrast, everything that could go wrong with the camera is basically, it's for $1,500. For $1,500, you can't use this camera.
Do you guys think, like, it does seem like Microsoft focused so hard on doing the dual screen stuff, getting the hardware right, getting the hinge right, and then they keep feeling on the software side, but even if they fixed all the other problems, if the camera was still crappy, would it still be a bad phone? Like to you guys,
I will jump right in and say no. I would be the first to say just dismiss the camera if everything else worked right.
Sure.
If the dual screen concept was properly executed, I'd say forget the camera. Who cares? Mm-hmm. It's a great dual screen device. It achieves the aims that Microsoft set out to achieve, but it doesn't. It's still so. It still has too many bugs, and it did solve a lot of them, but it also preserves a lot of them, sadly.
This almost seems like Microsoft's approach to product design sometimes. Like, I think of, like, the first Xbox, the very first Surface. Like, oh, my God, I reviewed that Surface. It was the Surface RT was the first one. It, like, in my opening paragraph was like, I want to throw this thing out the window. Like, it is just bad.
Yep,
it
me too. Oh,
awful.
My God.
Yeah.
And that's
go
ahead, Charlie. I'm sorry.
Fisher. I know that the camera isn't that important. And to be clear, like, now you have to hold this thing up like a tablet if you want to shoot outside. Like, if you want to take something that's other than a selfie. And then if you try to, like, open it up more than 180 degrees, you can't use the external cameras, just so you know, FYI, because it's disabled. The Microsoft doesn't allow you to. You literally can't switch cameras. So you can only use a selfie camera. So there's that. I mean, like, who wants to hold up a tablet to take photos and look like a jerk, you know? And then there's these little limitations that Microsoft built in. And then there's the fact that the app just doesn't freaking work very well. It's so inconsistent, unreliable. So anyway, I am going ham on the camera, I know. And if we could excuse the camera altogether and just get a dual screen device that didn't have or need a camera, I think, would the Duo 2 still be okay?
A note-taking device, like, I don't know, like, when we reviewed the iPad mini pretty well, and to me the iPad mini kind of fits into the space of, like, being a cute little portable note-taking thing,
and you kind of want you wanted the iPad mini to fold. I think so a lot of people were looking at the picture of the iPad mini and thinking,
it looks like a fold. I mean, well, that's the thing. I think that's the direct competitor to this is the Fold 3, right? Because
and
my frustration with it, I mean, almost take some of this not personally, but it's just so aggravating because it's like people who don't want to buy the Fold, people who want to buy the Duo instead of a Fold want dual screens. They want the seam between them because they want two workspaces.
Yes.
They want to be able to multitask in that way. And you can do that on the Fold, but you do it artificially through software, and it's a little clumsier. Mm. So if when the Duo 2 is working well, when you're tapping a link on one screen and it pops over into the other one and lets you keep doing what you were doing, it's beautiful. But it only does that one in every five times. And you'd never know what to expect. Sometimes you tap a link over there. Like yesterday, I'm walking around. I'm like, this will be perfect. I got the shot set up. We're going from the library to a bar. I'm going to click a link in the Google Doc on the left, and it's going to pop open Google Maps on the right. I will still have my list on the left, Maps on the right. Nope. Maps pops up, replaces Google Docs on the left-hand side. side, and then I try and move it over to see, but Docs isn't there anymore because it's just Android multitasking in a tile array.
Yep.
Oh, okay. So reopen on this side. Oh, okay. All right. I've got that now. That is every interaction. That is four or five interactions with the Duo. Oh, this will be easy. No. That was way harder. I just lost a lot of time.
Do you guys think it's impossible for Microsoft to kind of wrangle Android into this thing? Like, maybe Samsung is just doing a better job of it because they've been so focused on Android software for so long, whereas Microsoft kind of came off Windows Mobile, you know, and Windows Phone. And it was just like, okay, I guess we're doing Android now. Sure, whatever. They were never really fully in Android, I think.
I think it's a conceptual difference in how each manufacturer is approaching the issue, because Samsung is content to just make a bigger canvas.
Yep.
Here's your app. Run it full screen. Yes, it's a weird aspect ratio, but here you go. Microsoft is trying to do something harder. They are trying to squeeze Android into a weird box.
That's the story of their lives, isn't it? Like, you're making this so hard for yourself. The Surface Book. Why? A screen you detach from a dock and you have to hit a button. They over-engineer so many things. Man, it's a shame.
Yeah, it's totally them trying to do too much because they didn't have to do the taskbar on Android homepage. It screws up a bunch of things. There was another issue I was seeing with, like, in landscape mode with, with one screen open or half open. The Android navigation isn't where you'd expect it to be because of the taskbar in its place, in its way. And I asked Microsoft, like, what's going on? They were like, oh, this is by design.
Yeah.
I was like,
who's designing these things? Like, yeah.
Yeah, it's tough, right? Go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah. I'll finish this thought, which is that, Fisher, you bring up a really good point, which is Samsung not only is content to kind of just let Android be, and like what Devendra said, has been working with Samsung for so long now, they've also just somehow just managed to make their UI work, right? They've got, there's like aspect ratio issues, but they have that like span thing to take up. That's not their name, but you know what I mean? Like the expansion of apps to take up the whole screen. Samsung's sort of worked it out. Then there's like launching apps in multiple windows. They've always sort of had floating panel support. So you just need to expand that a little bit.
Right.
And the new Edge bar is actually really nice on the Fold 3, but I actually like, and I told you this during our like little chats before embargo, which is that I miss flex mode.
On the Duo?
This is something I didn't get to write in my review. Yeah, on the Duo 2, there were situations where I wish that it was like Samsung's flex mode, where you have, once the hinge is sort of bent, one side of the screen is an app. The other side where your hand is closer to can be like navigational UI. It can be just a joystick or a touchpad for the other screen that you can't reach with one hand. That would just make one-handed use a little easier. Mm-hmm. But Microsoft isn't Samsung. It's just they're thinking about this differently.
They are.
Fisher, you're saying.
Yeah.
So substantially differently. You're right. I don't want to miss all the things that are better. And I do feel every time I pick up this hardware, I want to build it into my workflow. I want this to be a device I can carry in concert with all my other odd phones that I really enjoy.
You want to believe.
I do. But also when you use, like, when you catch the glimpses of greatness, it's like the multitasking, as I talked about earlier. Oh, wow. Oh, that is handy. That it's the best $1,500 Kindle you will ever find. I love reading on this thing. Xbox Game Pass with the controls down there. Like, it's like there are so many good ideas. You know, the first time around, when you screw it, it's a first generation product. It's like the Surface RT. You know, we can forgive it. The next one will be better. Yeah. Is this one better? Yes. It's not better enough. And it really, really should be. And that's so frustrating.
Honestly, I feel kind of, I also, when they first announced the Duo, I did write a think piece saying, like, this is probably a better approach to dual screens. But if Microsoft keeps screwing this up and Samsung just keeps, like, getting better and better and better with
getting
the Fold,
better.
Like, they're going to, Microsoft is kind of like lose the runway that it has to actually make this concept work. And eventually the folding phones will be better. Like, then you wouldn't need this. Yeah.
I would argue that they're already there. Sorry.
Okay. Yeah.
No, go ahead. Finish your thought.
That was it. No, I mean, my argument would be that, like, I mean, the Fold 3 is here. It solidified it finally.
My
buddy Daniel Rubino was saying, he was just like, we were trading ideas back and forth too from Windows Central. And he was just like, this is a second generation product. It's not a third gen. It's not a Flip 3, which has arrived in the kind of compact foldable space. It's not a Fold 3. Maybe next year, I hope.
Yeah. Although we can rewind to the Fold 1, right? That was basically a beta product and a disaster. Yes. Yeah. So things can reorient really quickly. Go ahead.
So the thing I was trying to say before that, which, you know, it was around you guys talking about the testing that Microsoft has done, this being a second generation product. I think that Microsoft, in my dealings with the company so far on this product, it just feels like they're giving themselves too much like leeway. They're forgiving this device for a lot of its quirks.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, that's like a by design, or oh, that's not how you're supposed to use it. That sort of, they haven't said these exact words to me, of course, but like that's the sense I get, right? Like when I'm testing the camera out, I'm like, how did a Microsoft person have this experience and not think this was not okay?
Yeah. It feels like there's nothing at stake. It feels like they're fine in this part of the Surface division to just, if products fail, that's fine. It almost feels like you're testing some experimental thing that got out and they're just like, you know what, whatever.
Yeah. Whatever. Like maybe.
Or they're like, or they're like, it's okay that this makes this one thing, this doesn't do this way. It's okay. They're like, they're kind of excusing a lot of things and I don't get why. I don't understand why it's like $1,500. It's okay that the app doesn't allow you to use the camera beyond a certain point. Like, no, this is. It doesn't make sense, a lot of it. I'm just like, you're at engineer level and you're not at basic consumer level in your thinking.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Sorry, Devendra.
Does this make you guys less enthused about the Surface Neo, which is the, you know, the bigger dual screen device that could potentially run Windows? I do think, like, if they're not trying to be a phone, because PCs and, you know, little laptops, we don't care as much about the cameras, right? Those things, what you use a phone for versus what you use a notebook for is very different. Would the Neo kind of be a better approach, especially since that's running Windows and they can actually like run, you know, software on it? I think they said development has stopped on that. So that's probably never going to come, but who knows? Yeah.
My one sentence take before I would throw it all to Fisher is that it depends on the keyboard.
Sure.
For sure. I am coming fresh off reviewing the Surface Laptop Studio, which is I kept calling a delightful weirdo. I have much more faith in Microsoft when it comes to engineering Windows-based products, because as we've said a couple times now, it's a totally different animal when you're trying to wrangle Android and make Android do something that it can do technically, but obviously is hard to execute on. So yeah, no, I think if the Neo were still a thing, or if we get another, say, Lenovo foldable Windows PC, which, again, a concept I loved.
Listen, we saw the Asus. Fold, yes. What did they call that? Asus? Like, we saw concepts of that at Computex.
Oh,
yeah.
The dual screen one?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We have seen that. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I think those would be, Microsoft would do a much, much better job on that stuff because Windows 11 is already more adroit at handling different, you know, form factors like this. It's such a strange space.
It's funny that you bring up the Surface Laptop Studio, though, because, like, yeah, I just talked about that. And that's another device that makes me think, like, does Microsoft just, like, design these things in a vacuum? Because you're producing a very, very expensive quad-core laptop in the age of, like, 8-core CPUs and notebooks, Apple is squeezing 10-core mobile chips, but still 10 cores, into really, really thin machines. I look at the Surface Laptop Studio, I'm like, great hardware design. Why did you just stop at that chip when everybody is demanding more hardware right now? Like, look around. Just look around at what everybody else is doing. It seems like they refuse to do that. Yeah.
I would absolutely love to be a fly on the wall at some of these meetings, because I know there are, not to say like, oh, because they're so stupid, whatever. I want to know what the actual justifications are, because I know there are legit business reasons that are very secret and I will never know. But I want to know them. I'm very curious as to what decisions go into products like these, for better and worse. The Surface, like, you can't find a more interesting sub-brand of a major company almost than the Surface. Like, that group is kicking out some of the most interesting tech I've seen. Again, absolutely, for better or worse.
Yes.
It's fun. Yeah. It's fun. Yeah. But, like, I cover it from the journalism side of things. Like, oh, this is really exciting. It's really different. Then I talk to, like, people who actually bought, like, the first few generations of the Surface Book, and they're like, this is a nightmare. It's just always breaking. It doesn't work properly. So it's like there is that disconnect between what they're attempting to do and I think what, you know, we see so many gadgets. Like, I think things that are unique and different tend to, like, inspire that in us. I think back to, like, how my movie reviewer friends really latched on to crazy movies like Venom or Cats, because these are just, like, really bonkers movies that just shouldn't exist in the form they're in. I don't think they're actually very good, but they were so it like chipped through that veneer of like, oh my God, everything I see just looks the same.
Right. You couldn't sit there on autopilot anymore.
Right.
You were just like, oh wow, something different.
Something different. It's weird. I don't know if it's great. The quad core limit in the Surface Laptop Studio reminds me of that like apocryphal quote from Bill Gates about, was it 640 kilobytes of RAM should be enough for everybody, you know?
Yeah.
And that's kind of the feeling I got talking to the Surface people. They're like, in our testing, users find a quad core chip and a discrete GPU is enough for their purposes. I'm like, sure. In your testing, in your research, but they will not say no to more, you know? Do you guys have anything else you want to add on the Duo 2? Any further thoughts? Like, would you be excited for next year's model still after this?
I will say this. I think, Fisher, you alluded to it or outrightly said it at the start, and I just want to reemphasize it, is that like in our heads when we as reviewers are testing these things, I have an internal voice that's like, the haters are going to come for you if you don't exactly point out exactly that like this little thing is so much better. So I will say the one thing we didn't bring up so far yet is the glance bar. I'm sorry, it's kind of completely useless. Never really, like there's a tiny little clock that's in pixel size, like three pixels tall or something.
What if you miss a single line screen from your beepers, you know? What if you miss that?
Totally. Yeah. If you want a pager, but like big and unwieldy and you can't really see it.
If the Galaxy Z Flip first generation had just too big of an external display for you. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes. Exactly. So there's that. But anyway, that's like my internal monologue in my head is that like all these haters are going to come for me. I'm going to go home. Well, I'm home. But I'm going to after this just like, you know, hide in my tub and be like just in my blankets. Just like, oh my God, they're coming for me. And I'm not going
to.
But
I will say this. Said, yeah. To people on the internet. What are you doing? You should want better things. We are fighting for better things for you.
Stop excusing bad performance. Yep. Yeah. So that's my main thing after this. Because like, I know I kind of criticized the Duo too hard in my review. And I'm just like, look, y'all haven't had to live with this as your main phone and haven't had to pay $1,500. Not that I had to, but like if you had to pay $1,500 for it, think about it. Mm-hmm. Fisher.
The real bummer is that this device launches in the busiest month for us, as we all know. And as a result, you're able to test it alongside other devices, some of which you're allowed to talk about, some of which you're not. And it's like every other device that I'm currently testing, when I have to swap over to it for some reason, it is faster. It is easier. Yes. It actually makes me productive. And the entire purpose for the Duo 2 is to make you more productive, to make you able to stay in your flow and all that other stuff. So what a shame, you know, like that I think that's the biggest probably failure on Microsoft's point from a reviewing standpoint right now is like, if you know that you're shipping a device that's in this state, don't ship it alongside devices like, spoiler alert, the Pixel 6, you know, it's like, don't do that. Also though, I will make the point that like, with a device like this, I feel like you do need to test it over a long time. Now, my review will still go up after a week, like everyone's and whatever. But I'm still going to carry the thing like I carried the first one on, you know, alternating weekends when I'm not carrying the other foldables and stuff. Because it evolves over time. Some updates fix things. Some updates break new things. And then, you know, it is not a static device. And I look forward to hopefully some of it improving. But you got to make a device you can type fast on, guys. I don't know.
Oh, my God. I will close on this note, which is that I've had the Surface Duo open in front of me to keep an eye on the live chat throughout this whole segment. And it's the YouTube app has like crashed on me 3 times during this time.
Oh,
and because I have Telegram right below it, it's it will go to picture-in-picture mode because I have the YouTube Premium. So now when YouTube crashes, it just goes to Telegram. And then for some reason, it pulled up the keyboard, which takes up maybe like 2/3 of the screen. So, you know, and this is just my main takeaway with the Duo 2, which is it's just completely unexpected, unreliable, inconsistent, and it will gaslight the shit out of reviewers.
Maybe maybe next year they'll just put Windows 11 in a phone. How about that? I don't know.
Thanks for joining me to kind of offer your feedback as well on the Duo 2 situation. I'm glad it's not just me feeling this way.
It is not
Thanks
just
for your
you.
Precious time, Fisher.
Thank you for
having
me.
Where can people
me.
Find you on the internet?
On Twitter at Captain Two Phones, but of course on YouTube and Instagram at the Mr. Mobile, TheMrMobile. And my review will be up soon. And really, thank you for another opportunity to talk at length about this delightful weirdo. Sometimes delightful weirdo.
One request for you, Fisher.
Yeah.
Hey, can you tell us your tagline?
Do the thing.
Do the thing.
Oh,
do the thing.
I'm honored. Yes, of course. Thank you once again for having me. And stay mobile, my friends.
Yay!
I'm never on video when I say that. It's so awkward. Thank you for asking.
Let's move on to some other news, real quick. We've got a bunch of stuff coming from Facebook, including a report from The Verge that Facebook is reportedly considering changing its name. We may learn net more next week at the Oculus Connect conference. You know, just throw your ideas out there. You know, MyFace, The Void, Horizon.
Oh, no.
I don't know. Horizon could be a good one because that's actually the branding for a lot of their VR stuff.
In Upload.
The idea. Yeah, the idea is that they may lean more on being a metaverse company with the new name. But also,
I think the name... Mm-hmm. Sorry, go ahead.
It's very clear that this is a good time to run away from all the bad buzz they're getting. But it could be a Google Alphabet situation where Facebook will still exist, but there's a new parent company. But what do you think, Sherlyn?
I just think that the name will be called Meta. It'll be very meta.
Metaverse. There's so much. I'm sure it'll be hilarious. I'm sure it'll be kind of terrible. And we'll hear more from Oculus Connect next week. We reviewed the Facebook Portal Go. I believe Nicole reviewed that for us.
Yes.
And she says it blurs the line between tablet and smart display. I was not a huge fan of the last Portals, but this one's smaller. So, okay. Sure.
And portable. That's basically it. That's the main take from this review is that this is more portable. That's it. And so if you really liked Facebook's portal displays, which we always want to caution you that Facebook just doesn't have a good track record and they have all your information already.
People like those things. If you really want something. But
they like it because it's so easy with Messenger and WhatsApp.
Yeah,
that's it. Right? It's the only thing really out there that supports those two apps. So, okay, fine. And then it has that good like pan and zoom feature that follows you around.
Yep.
Sure. So this time... It's just you can bring it throughout your house, wherever. So sure, if you want to support Facebook with your monies by buying hardware from them, go for it.
Maybe hold off on that, folks. Just take a step. There's so many other solutions out there. Speaking of Facebook, we also got news that Instagram is going to let you create posts from your desktop.
Finally,
like everybody who's been like faking their DSLR photos as like phone photos and uploading them. We know what you're doing. Now you could just like actually... Throw your higher quality photos up there. So yeah, that's cool, I guess.
So Samsung had an event this week as well. Let's not forget, there's been a lot going on this week. I mean, we talked about this already. But Samsung's event this week was Unpacked Part 2, where it unveiled different versions of existing devices and a bespoke program for the Galaxy Z Flip 3, where you can basically customize it. When we were just talking about the Moto X earlier today, Devendra, but basically this is similar to the bespoke fridge that Samsung makes already.
Do they really need an event for all this? Like, just looking at these announcements, it does seem like they're like, Samsung was looking at all the attention Apple and Google and everybody are getting, you know, and it's just like, hey, look at me. Look at me for 20 minutes. Give me news.
Yeah, I just feel like they bought a live stream set and they were like, let's make the most use of it. Let's get a big ROI. So anyway, I don't know if anybody watched that event. I sure didn't. It was very liberating to not have to watch a Samsung event. But if you want the news, though, we got you covered. Check it out at your own time when you don't have to stick to Samsung's schedule for an event. Just read our article whenever you have time on Engadget.com. Hey, this was a busy week. It wasn't just Google, Apple, and Samsung. Sony had an event. Razer had an event. DJI had an event. They announced new microphones by Razer. DJI had a new drone camera, I believe. So again, we covered all of that for you to digest at your own speed, at your own pace. It's all on Engadget.com.
It's all there. Hey, we've got
what else happened?
We've got a bunch of fun news. So let's end up, off on all this stuff, including the first trailer for the Uncharted movie, which finally exists. finally exists. I feel like it's been 10 years of rumors and people being attached to it and different actors being attached to it. Like, I believe at one point, Mark Wahlberg was going to be Nathan Drake, the lead of the series. Flash forward 10 years, he is now the older mentor guy, like live long enough to be the mentor character. Ooh. When you were supposed to be the lead. What's his face? Tom Holland, Spider-Man.
Tom Holland
is Nathan Drake. I don't know if I have any faith in this movie. It's directed by Ruben Fleischer, who did Zombieland. I really like Zombieland. I have not liked a much of what Ruben Fleischer has done since then, including Venom, which we talked about. So, hey.
I kind of liked Venom.
It's fine. It's perfectly fine. It's just like, yeah, I don't. It's kind of like lazy filmmaking from him. But hey,
okay.
This trailer looks fine. It looks like an Indiana Jones movie. It looks like an Uncharted movie. I'm sure we're going to get the trademark. Whoa, 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 whoa. Hey. I'm going to fall. I'm falling over here thing. It already looks like there is that at the end of the trailer. So
nice.
Okay. It exists. It's going to be coming out supposedly on February 18th. But movies are getting delayed all over. So that may not happen. One other surprising thing that happened this week is that Mel Brooks, the legend, the comedic legend, is producing History of the World Part 2 for Hulu. Mel Brooks is 95 years old, but he's going to apparently write and produce this thing. The original film was from the 80s and was basically, it was called A History of the World Part 1. As a joke, because they were never going to like make another one.
You are.
Yeah, that was a 1981 movie. I grew up watching a lot of these things. It's not like among my favorites for him. Like, it'd probably be more Blazing Saddles for me. But it is amazing to me that this is getting made and that he can do it. And it's going to be on Hulu. So this is a Hulu exclusive. Yeah. Kind of a cool thing. And something else happened, Trillin. I think you're really excited about.
Yeah, I
mobile-wise.
I couldn't help. One night, I was just on our Engadget website, and I realized we published a story about a Fisher Price phone. This thing looks cute as heck. I don't know if you guys remember, Fisher Price had a toy phone called the Chatter.
It still exists. All around.
It still exists. Yeah, and it's a rotary dial phone that kids can play with a cute little face on it. It has wheels for some reason, even though it doesn't go anywhere, I don't think.
Kids roll everything.
But Fisher-Price made a working version of this. So you can use the rotary dial to actually call people if you remember phone numbers anymore. So, 212-345-6789 on that thing and go ham.
Thank you for an example of a phone number.
Yeah. A very real phone number. I know. This is the number I give to press events when they ask me for my phone number. Mm-hmm. So just FYI. I feel bad for whoever actually has that phone number because it might be real.
It might be real. They're getting all this stuff about embargoed information
I'm
that they
so
have to
sorry.
Sign.
Yeah. but yeah, that was a fun piece of news this week that really, really lit up my evening while I was crunching on embargoes. So that's it for the news roll call. Devendra.
Real quick.
What can we expect from you for next week?
Oh, yeah. I'm working on a bunch of reviews. Listen, new hardware is coming, folks. So you can imagine like what we're reviewing. I'm also writing up something on Denis Villeneuve's Dune adaptation, which I talked about it last week. It's going to be out tomorrow. It's going to be out on Friday on HBO Max and in theaters. So I've got a piece about it, about why it may be worth seeing in theaters if you can. But that's me. Yeah. Just a lot of writing this weekend, as usual.
Yeah, I meanwhile am just finishing up reviewing the Pixel 6s. They will be in time for whenever you need to buy them on shelves. Those of you waiting on pre-orders and for the page to work, hey, at least the silver lining of the pre-order page not working is that you get to wait for the reviews to go up. So
time to think twice.
Call.
Yeah,
you might want to. Yeah. And that's mostly what I'm working on. There's some other stuff in the background that, We'll talk about next time. But yeah, how about what we're relaxing to? Devendra, do you want to start?
Sure. I've been marathoning the Halloween movies because I had to review Halloween Kills for my movie podcast, the Filmcast. And have to say, I missed out on the 2018 Halloween reboot directed by David Gordon Green. not really a fan of like where they've been taking the series, but the original film, the 1978 film by John Carpenter, is still a stone cold classic. It's practically a perfect horror movie. So it was really nice to be able to rewatch that on my projector here at home. Love that movie. It's always worth rewatching. We're getting into spooky season, so I would always recommend just like going back if you feel overwhelmed by like crazy horror movies right now that are really just high on gore and kills and everything. Halloween is such a like slow burn classic, just creepy movie. And there's some kills, but it's like four kills in that movie. You know, it's more about a malevolent, just an unstoppable force of evil, you know, invading suburbia. So if you've never seen Halloween, I don't believe it's streaming anywhere right now. I think I had to rent it on iTunes, but it's worth buying or renting. It's a perfect movie. I did not really like Halloween Kills very much, just because it goes overboard. It's kind of a mess. But you know, it's a thing. It's apparently been doing really well in theaters, and it's done. It's funny because it's made a lot of money in theaters, even though it's streaming on Peacock as a premium, you know, for, on the premium side of Peacock. And people would rather like risk their lives and go to theaters and subscribe to Peacock, apparently. That's the takeaway I'm getting from this. But yeah, check out the original Halloween and yeah, let me know your thoughts about these remakes or reboots, basically. Sherlyn, what's up on your end?
Every week nowadays when I have to think of what I'm suggesting for entertainment, I realize that my life is a sad little hole of non-new shows. I just binge watch old shows. But I realize that I actually have been addicted to a game. Please do not judge me for this.
What are we in for now?
I downloaded a game just to test new phones with. And I just got hooked. It's called Airplane Chefs. And basically, if you want to be a flight attendant and serve these very impatient guests their food, they're like heated up in the airplane microwave food.
Now I know what you're missing, actually, because I've traveled with you enough on airplanes where I see you demand your food on the plane. I'm like, okay.
I don't demand my food, but I do get up for it. I never miss the airplane in-flight meal. Never. It's always like so comforting for some reason.
Even when it's like we get on a plane at 1 a.m. and then they serve quote-unquote dinner at 2 a.m. I don't know why, but okay.
I love it. So now I got a sense of the inner workings of airlines through this game, because all they do is stick it in a microwave. It's a burger and they heat it up in the oven and then they make the drinks in the dispenser. And it's a very cramped setup. But like, I mean, it just reminds me of travel, I guess. And we're all getting out there soon. So, you know, if you're still in a place where you're not traveling, but you kind of miss the experience, the sound effects in this are actually kind of good, too, other than the people being very impatient.
I don't know. Where did you find this? Yeah. What?
Full disclosure, I was looking for the word chef because I was looking for another game. And then I saw this pop up in the Play Store listing. And I was like, all right, I'll check this one out. And it was just weirdly addicting. Anyhow, it's on iOS and Android. And so basically everyone can play it. And I have fun with it. So you might too. And I'm addicted. So addicted.
Oh man, we got to find some better games for Sherlyn. Please drop us some suggestions at podcastinggadget.com. And thank you all for joining us, folks. Why don't you take us out?
All right, that's it for the episode this week, everyone. Thank you, as always, for listening. Our theme music is by game composer Dale North. Our outro music is by our very own Terrence O'Brien. This podcast is produced by Ben Elman. You can find Devendra online at
Devendra on Twitter and at the Filmcast podcast at thefilmcast.com.
If you want to tweet me which airlines have the best in-flight food or snacks, I am on Twitter at Sherlyn Lowe. Email us your thoughts at podcast@engadget.com. Leave us a review on iTunes and subscribe on anything that gets podcasts, including Spotify.
Stay mobile, my friends.
Yay!
I'm never on video when I say that. It's so awkward. Thank you for asking.